We here at the Kansas City Baseball Vault would like to thank all veterans on this here Memorial Day. Without the veterans, we would not be able to do this show, and we recognize that and are thankful for that. To all of you who have served or currently are, thank you. To all of you who have lost family to war or because of lingering effects of war, we recognize your loss and thank you as well. And now, the Kansas City Baseball Vault. And Michael Engel, that is probably the most positive this show is going to be at any point today.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's about as yeah. That's all. I'm at a loss.
So a happy Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of weeks since we've done a show. There's been some tornadoes down in Hayes, Kansas that got in the way, but thank God for you that they weren't as bad as what hit the poor folks of Moore.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I have friends in Norman, and if that tornado had turned 3 miles south, they would have been wiped out as well. So our prayers are – well, my prayers are with the folks in Norman, and I'm pretty sure I can fairly say that both of our thoughts are with the good folks of – or not Norman, but Moore, and that our thoughts are with the folks down in Oklahoma. That's scary stuff. And for all of us that have lived through tornadoes, and I mean – hell, I went down to Joplin a year after it happened, and it was still a wreck, so I can only imagine what they're going to be doing down there. Fortunately, Oklahoma City's right there, and it sounds like they're getting a lot of help. So Kansas City's a little farther, and so is St. Louis, a little farther from Joplin, so it was a little harder, but it's almost like they have too many volunteers down there right now. So hopefully they'll get that all cleaned up, but that's not what this show's about. But that's one of the many things that have happened since we last recorded because of schedules and tornadoes and God knows what else has gone on while we've been away. But Mike wrote up a list of some of the changes that have happened since we last talked. And what we're going to do is we're just going to go through these changes and talk on them. And I'm probably going to rant. And probably a good chance I'm going to do that.
It's completely justified.
I have never been so down on this team. But let's start with our list here. Best guess since last time we actually recorded a show. Now, that's not necessarily when we post it because sometimes it takes me time because I don't work in front of a computer anymore, so it's difficult for me to get posted right away a lot of times. But the Royals were 17-12 when we last recorded. They're now 21-26. It is 5/26/2013 at 4 p.m. Arizona time. since then, the Royals have adjusted the lineup, moved Gordon to third. I mean, has there been any – chain, you know, have we seen anything out of this? Because this murderer's row sure in hell ain't scoring runs.
No, and the thing is that Gordon, so often, I think in what, 16 games or so, he's come to the plate in the first inning with two outs and nobody on. So it's like you gain absolutely nothing by having him third in the order there, because what you end up with is he's basically batting leadoff but with the handicap of two outs. And the whole thing happened at this point where he was hitting like 480, you know, just a completely ridiculous hot stretch, and it was wasted. He drove in six runs through the whole thing because he never had any runners on. And, you know, all that happens is, you know, throughout the game, you know, your number one hitter usually is going to come up more often than your number two hitter, and your number two is going to come up more often than the number three hitter. And you know, that's what you're kind of doing when you move him, is you're willingly taking at-bats away from him when he's your best player. And, you know, you just it's just a problem. But the bigger issue is the fact that he had to be moved. You know, he can't get on base for himself to drive in, but nobody else is doing it.
You mean Chris Getz is not a viable leadoff hitter?
Chris Getz isn't a viable number nine hitter in my book. So, no.
We'll dive into that a little more here in a second, but I couldn't help myself but to bring that up.
I mean, they tried to hit Alcides Escobar, and he's been bad all month. They tried to hit Lorenzo Cain leadoff, and they said he wasn't comfortable. They gave him two games to do it, so, you know, you can tell me if that's a reasonable enough time to figure it out. You know, they've tried Elliot Johnson batting second. Now they're at Chris Getz, you know, that just isn't – you're putting guys up there who have, you know, on-base percentages of 250, and that's just not going to get it done. If you're making an out 75% of the time when you're supposed to be the guy getting on base, you're not going to get on base. And if you don't get on base, you're not going to score runs. So, you know, that's where they're at.
Well, and then, you know, Lesky's on Twitter right now puking because of everything that's going on. And you know, he's saying, you know, oh, guys, it takes 8 years. And, I mean, I would like to just sit down and look at pro sports as a whole, not just baseball, and see how many teams – how many different teams have made the playoffs in the last 8 years, and how many different teams have not made the playoffs in the last 8 years? And I bet you that it's going to be less than five between the four major sports.
Yeah, I mean, in baseball, it would be like the Pirates, the Royals, and in the last 8 years, God, I don't know. I mean, even teams like the Astros. You look at a team like the A's. The A's made the playoffs. You know, they had the Moneyball era. You know, they had the Giambi and Damon period, then they had the Moneyball right after, then they tore everything down, and then they rebuilt and have been there again since Dayton Moore's been hired. The Orioles
have
done similar things, and it's just, it's gross, it's ridiculous.
And, okay, so staying with what we've done just in the last 2 weeks since we last recorded, the Royals promised a new approach. They stuck to it one game, and they won.
Yeah.
And then they went away from it.
Yeah, they had that one game against Anaheim. They walked three times in an inning. They scored seven runs in an inning. They looked good. They actually won two games in L.A. by kind of being a little more patient. I don't think it's a coincidence that Jarrod Dyson was starting to lead off in some of those games. So, you know, that kind of – he was hitting a good streak. Then he got hurt, you know, chasing a ball that he was not going to catch. And that was it. It's been really awful since then.
Well, the Naturals are losing already. That's nice to see, too. I was watching that game before we started recording.
Lovely.
Seeing if Duffy got any playing time. Plus, ever since you kind of brought him up to me, I've kind of developed a man crush for Matt Fields, and we were supposed to have him on last week, and he came down with a bit of the flu and actually sat out a game, so that's why we didn't have him on, which is part of the reason we didn't have a show, because we couldn't get together and I couldn't get any of these stupid interviews I was trying to do done. It's just been a real hectic couple of weeks, and I apologize to the listeners, but it is what it is, and I can, you know, until we can actually get paid to do this, it gets a little more difficult. Dyson and Frenchie and Johnson and Getz platoons have seemed to develop.
They started to, despite what Ned Yost said. Ned Yost was saying, no, no way, there's no way I'm doing a platoon. But you look at the lineups, and anytime there was a right-handed pitcher, Dyson was playing instead of Frenchie, and likewise for Johnson, and the other way around, you know. So, you know, whatever he was saying just clearly wasn't matching the actions, which shouldn't be all that surprising anymore. I think everybody's tired of Yost, but we can get to that in a little bit. But, yeah, that started coming around, and Dyson was hitting really well. He was taking walks. He was actually, I think he leads the team still in slugging percentage because he just keeps getting triples and doubles and was hitting the ball well, had a homer against the Yankees, and it wasn't a cheapie. He crushed it. It was 400 feet. So he was playing really well, and then he got hurt, sprained his ankle. And I think the last I heard, they expect him to be out for another 2 to 3 weeks.
But that got friend of the program David Lowe a shot, so it'll be interesting to
see.
Yeah,
and Lowe tripled, and I think he had a double in a game, and he had a really bad error in Oakland, and I think kind of got put in the doghouse. And then, you know, Yost said that he was going to put Frank Cora in a game in Houston, and I think first inning, ball is heading his way, and he completely misses it. And later, he misses another ball. So,
In very sad news, Fred White passed away. Now, not to be confused with Frank White, the number 20 black baseball player for the Royals, played second base. Fred White, if you don't know, was one of the original – well, was him – it was him and Denny that were the original.
The original two were Buddy Blattner and Denny Matthews, and then in 1973, Fred White joined the booth, and then I think it was 73, but he joined a couple years later. But he was there for up until, what, 98 or something?
Yeah, and he had literally said that leaving baseball would kill him. He literally retired the day before he died.
Yeah.
His health had gotten to a point where he could no longer continue, and he literally was part of baseball till you died. And, you know, you think about guys like that, and you look at, you know, what were we calling ourselves earlier this week? It wasn't the Basement Bloggers, but it was something else. But you look at our
the
crew.
The Pop-Tart Brigade, I think is what Craig
Yeah,
Brown
the Pop-Tart Brigade, and... Yeah, and what have you. You know, you look at those guys and or all of us, and I think every one of us would love to be able to say that we did baseball until the day we died in some aspect. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's a passion, and just like, you know, that's what it was for Fred White. You know, the Royals fired him, and he stayed within the organization as, you know, part of their communication staff. You know, and how often does that happen where you get fired after a long tenure and you stick around just because you love the organization? Doesn't happen that often.
So,
and, you know, he would always do Big 8 basketball, and he would always do later Big 12 basketball and a lot of stuff. He was play-by-play guy for K-State basketball for a long time as well. You know, just it's what it was. I mean, my summers were always basically, you know, rec league baseball, mowing lawns, and listening to the Royals on the radio. You know, there were a couple of years where the Royals didn't broadcast home games at all, so you only had your road games, and, you know, that leaves half the schedule there where you're just listening to the radio. So that was Denny and Fred. And, you know, there's so many, like the day that he passed, there were so many different people who dug up just different calls from different spots, and, you know, some really great ones. He called the Pine Tar game. He called George Brett's homer off Goose Gossage in 1980. He was calling. There's some great lines, and we'll have to find it and tack it onto the end, because he said it right after the Royals won Game 6 of the World Series in 85, and it pretty much wrapped up that team and a lot of kind of the mystique of baseball. And I think it was really great tribute to, you know, this guy hasn't been actually on the air for the Royals consistently in 15 years, and yet you've got people, you know, going out of their way to find things that he said before and to share their memories. And, you know, I think that's about as great a tribute you could probably have as somebody in this kind of business. Still there? Shoot.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Are you still there?
Oh, I think the cat was playing with my headset and muted it.
Oh.
Because the mute's about halfway down my string, and I've got a baby kitten that's playing around with it.
Okay, so
anyways,
we'll edit this. We'll edit that.
Or we won't. I'll decide. We might leave it in. It's kind of funny. It's at least there's something positive going on in this episode. I know Kevin Scobie's going to love this episode because it's just a blah, 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 everything sucks type episode. But I know a lot of our listeners listen to us because we do try to put a positive spin on things. But sorry, guys, it ain't happening this week. But as far as Fred White is concerned, quality person, quality human being. But, you know, it also speaks to something that Eric Edelstein had said, and that he loved working for David Glass. I mean, we as fans, we hate David Glass, although with everything being said, he was a good owner this year. He hasn't been in the history of the team, but for what he did this offseason, he did all the right things. He let his GM do what his GM needed to do to potentially put out a winning product. It hasn't showed up, and you can blame that on the GM, you can blame that on the coach, but the one thing you can't do is you can't blame this on the owner. And Glass has been a crappy owner. I'm not giving him any credit for being anything but that until the last couple of years. And that's one thing that when we've talked about Mellinger, he's always said, you know, if you look at the last 6 years versus the first 5 years, it's a totally different owner. And so all that being said, he's not necessarily a good baseball owner, but he is obviously a good businessman, and people that work directly for him like working for him. I mean, of course they're going to say – of course his active employees are probably going to say that, but we heard that so many times when we were in the Blog to the K stuff about how, you know, David Glass is a good man and what have you. But Fred White sticking around even after being removed from his position tells you that there's some sort of – something there that – in this organization that makes people want to stay. And, you know, you look at that and you got to take a little bit away from that as far as as far as the top of the organization is concerned from a business perspective. Now, the problem is they don't run a baseball team very well.
Yeah.
Getting back to baseball, Bubba gets LASIK surgery, which Hosmer did too, and that seemed to make him a lot better for a while, but he's awful this year too, but that's coming up later.
Yeah.
It looks like Bubba's kind of come back from it, and it's something that is going to be a positive, hopefully, for his career, but he needs to turn a lot of things around too, mm-hmm. or he's going to end up playing football in Nebraska very soon.
Yeah, he needs to kind of get it going. He left in the middle of the month. He finally came back. He's been back for at least 6 games, and since then, you know, the results haven't been there yet. He's gotten 4 hits since. So, you know, not great. 2 of those were doubles. He's walked a few times. It's a weird procedure because I did some research on this just because I was curious, and it was like there's a lot of ophthalmologists who really won't do that surgery until somebody's getting into, 20, 21 years old, because just like a lot of people, a lot of things are still growing and still developing, and this is it's a procedure that basically they do stuff to your cornea. I don't know. I'm not an ophthalmologist, so I don't know exactly the procedure, but it can still be growing. So even after they've done the procedure, sometimes it can regress. So they can't do a full correction. They can correct it to where they can get your vision better, but they can't, at that young of an age, they're not always sure. They always will examine you first to make sure that, okay, this isn't going to be something that we're going to have to completely restructure later. So apparently he was fine, but it can also regress, and there's questions that maybe this is a problem with Hosmer, is that he's not able to see the ball as well, not able to react as quickly, because maybe he had the surgery too soon. It's a legitimate question. Bubba was saying that he was having trouble seeing the ball at night, and we've heard from Jason Parks about pitch recognition in Bubba Starling, and so this is maybe another part of that, where if he's seeing the ball better, maybe he can make a better reaction to it, especially from against right-handers. He's hitting lefties all right, but against right-handers he's been really bad, and so you kind of hope that maybe that's something that does turn it around. Hasn't happened yet, but it's only been 6 games, so I think you kind of have to look over the course of the season from here on and kind of see, and then you can make your judgment about how much it actually benefited him to go and have that procedure done.
And then in the craziness that is the Kansas City Royals and the things that they let go on from the manager's position, while Gio starts taking games at third in Omaha, Ned is up here talking about the third base tree and instant gratification, and apparently 8 years is instant gratification, you guys.
Right.
Gio playing third, is that the answer? I mean, do we have so much second base talent that we need Gio playing third?
I wouldn't even be so sure that we have second base talent is the thing.
That was sarcasm.
Yeah, I mean, you got Getz, who everybody knows how I feel about Getz. I don't like Getz.
He's a bust.
I just don't like Getz, a bust. That would imply that Getz was ever a prospect. Or are you talking about Gio?
Well, no, I think you have to look at Getz at least in the same prospect eye as you look at Gio. I know people don't like to make that comparison, but he looked like he was going to be able to handle the position for a while, and then he's fallen apart. He's become what people like you expected Chris Getz to be.
And, he just has no power, and if you don't have power, you either have to have a ridiculous ability to make contact and get hits, and or you have to have a very good ability to take a walk and just get on base, and he doesn't do that. He doesn't, he walks less frequently than the average major leaguer. He makes contact about as an average major leaguer, but he doesn't get that many hits. And, he has absolutely no power. So his next option is basically he has to be completely lights out with the glove, and he's not that either. So in every possible way where he could compensate for having no power, he has nothing. And, it's just not working out. Elliot Johnson, I think, is a really good athlete, but long term, I don't think anybody expects him to be able to be a second baseman. Christian Colon doesn't seem ready. The only other option is Johnny Giovitella, and now they have him taking reps at third base. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do, if that's they're getting him ready for the eventual point where they have to send Mike Moustakas to Omaha and they just put Giovatella at third. I don't know. I mean, but it's clear that the organization is really tied to Getz no matter what he does. We said it a couple of times on here that they just seem to value all those little things that don't really help that as much as they think they do. And as a result, he stays in the lineup. And now, they've got him in the leadoff spot. And, not just in the lineup, but in a prominent spot in the lineup. So I don't think Getz is going to go anywhere. They've got to have him there so that they can make a quick switch and move him to third, which is strange. Certainly. It's just, I still think Giovatella can hit, but I'm not going to sit here and say that he's a guarantee to do it because he hasn't done it yet. So I don't know.
But it'd be nice to see if he could.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I'm really at the point now where, and he's starting to get older. He's
25.
The prime years are 27. Is when they say people hit their prime. That's when Gordon had his big breakout and what have you. And so. I mean, when's he going to get his shot? And he hasn't gotten that
right yet.
I mean,
what do you have to lose? You've got nothing to lose. They've lost. They're 4-16 in the last 20 games. What's it going to hurt to bring up a guy who's actually hitting something in the minors?
And the thing is, it just seems like the Royals just wait. And this has been true the whole 8 years that we've had this current organization, this current front office. I mean, Dayton Moore just seems to always find another guy that he wants to try out at a position rather than giving a guy in the organization a shot. You look back at time, and I'm going to use some examples of guys that busted, but it would have been nice to know 2 years earlier they were going to bust. Mm-hmm. But the Royals went out, and they traded for Mike Jacobs, okay? And the trade was a horrible trade, even though the guy they traded for ended up being not who he said he was. Or who they traded was a guy who he said wasn't who he said
he was. Well, the guy they traded for wasn't who he said he was either.
No. And, I mean, I didn't hate that trade because Jacobs had put up some interesting numbers, but it just didn't work out. But it made no sense to make that deal because we all knew at that time that team wasn't a power-hitting first baseman away from the playoffs. So why would you make that trade? It doesn't make sense. But more importantly, that blocked Hila Kaiahui from getting a shot to show if he was worth a shit in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And he wasn't. But it would have been nice to know 2 years earlier that that was the case.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And then you can move on to whoever else was in the system at the time or was coming up, with Butler and everything else. And it might have even given, if they would have gotten Keela out of the way earlier, you might have even given Clint Robinson or somebody like that a shot a little sooner, or somebody else that was lingering in the system that might have had a cup of coffee at the major leagues because of it. But instead, we trade for Mike Jacobs. Now we're seeing the same thing with Chris Getz and Johnny Giovatella. There's no reason. We know what Chris Getz
exactly
is. We've given him the shot. He's had a chance. It didn't work. And I'm not even, upset with Getz getting a shot because he was great. He did show flashes of great defense and decent offense. And there's no reason for him to not get a shot to start the year. But it's gone long enough. But now we turn around, and Moustakas is awful right now. Mm. But your answer to that is that you're going to put Johnny G at third base. I mean, he doesn't have the power to be a third baseman. And I know our friend D.B. Leske hates saying that these positions have to be power positions, but I believe in the email chain where we talked about this, you mentioned that there are certain positions where you expect power from because that's how baseball works. There are certain positions that don't hit for power, second base, shortstop, with the exceptions of the A-Rods of the world. Even A-Rod, he's a third baseman now because he was such a power hitter and he went to a team that had, the best shortstop of our generation for a while. He's not that now, but I mean, Derek Jeter was, as good as anybody since the Ozzie Smith, Cal Ripken days, mm-hmm. And he even ended up at third. And you look at guys there's the odd chances like you get a Derek Jeter or somebody that can really produce out of that shortstop position. But mostly you're looking for a defensive person there that keeps you alive. And, an Escobar. Escobar is exactly what you want out of your shortstop.
Yeah, you get a guy who can hit a little bit. You know, he hit well last year. He hasn't hit well this year. But, you know, with the exception of a few mistakes, he's made some pretty excellent plays, and he's made the routine ones, too.
Right. And I mean, he makes his fair share of mistakes, and he actually led the league in errors earlier this year because he tries to get to balls that he shouldn't, and he tries to force it, and it doesn't work out, and that's something that he's going to have to work on, of knowing when he's just got to take that ball and eat it. That's something for another show. But, you know, it's just – it's ridiculous, and it'll be interesting to see what they do. And we're going to talk – I'm holding back on talking about Moustakas because we're going to talk about Moustakas, Hosmer, and this whole mess here in just a little bit. But really quick, I'm saving – Danny Duffy had a rehab start in AA, and Herrera got optioned to Omaha. Coleman's up. I don't really want to hit on those until we get into our minor league segment, and we'll talk about that there. Sal got hurt. He stayed around, and then he went on the bereavement list. But I don't think it's anything to worry about. Really think if you get 140 games out of Sal Perez this season, you're probably getting what you expect.
Yeah.
He's never going to be – he's never – well, no catcher anymore catches 162 because most don't catch the day after a night and stuff like that.
Yep.
But I think even more so with Sal, you're expecting some days off for Sal Perez because he is going to be – you know, he's a good catcher. He's a solid catcher. He's exactly what Kansas City needs. He signed a great team-friendly contract that's going to help the team in the long run. But he's going to get hurt. And I don't think we really have much to worry about here. It's just Sal Perez being Sal Perez.
Yeah, I mean, he sat out two games. He would have been available to pinch hit or whatnot if necessary. You know, I don't think there was anything to worry about once they determined that he was, you know, good to go. And it's just, it just happens that he does at least get a break. I mean, it's under bad circumstances because he's on the bereavement list because of the death of his grandmother, which, you know, is unfortunate. But, you know, when he comes back, he's going to have a few days extra off. And George Gutierrez is showing that he can at least hold his own filling in for him. He, you know, his batting average looks terrible, but he's got, I think, second or third best on base percentage on the team.
And you know what's great about George Gutierrez, and it's why he's a great signing, is because he does know how to take a walk. And if all the guys you want to be leaders on this team, you wish he could kind of share that with some of these others, because this team is way too antsy at the plate. And Gutierrez just stands there and just watches pitches. I mean, I would be okay with putting him in the leadoff spot until until Sal gets back, because he like you said, his OBP's good, and he watches a lot of pitches, and that's really good for your 3-4-5 hitters if your 3-4-5 hitters are worth a shit.
Yeah, well, that's another assumption.
I'm angry.
Oh,
as
yeah.
You can tell. I'm just so
think
angry.
You're right, though. I mean, Gutierrez could easily do that. It's very unconventional, which is kind of why I think the Royals wouldn't do it, but at the same time, batting Gordon leadoff was a little unconventional, too. Because he kind of looks more like the number three, number four kind of hitter. And it was a little weird at the time when they made that change, too. So maybe they'll do it. Maybe a lot of people have talked about Eric Hosmer, and I think that's another guy that, you know, until he starts hitting for more power, he could be a leadoff guy, too. But they're not going to overtake Getz. I mean, nobody overtakes Getz. Let's be real here.
I mean, he's Chris Getz. He's got to be a leadoff hitter. At this point, we got some things that we'd want to see as far as this team's concerned. We're going to talk about all that coming up here, but we're going to call it a quick break, but we're actually not going to take a break because I'm going to do the commercial live right here. But I, you know, all of this has just made everybody sick. And, you know, and the thing is, it's funny, too, because it's not just, you know, of course it's not just us. There's everybody. But I just noticed that the guys from the Inverted W, a podcast friend of ours that was saying that if they did a podcast right now, they haven't done one in a while either. And if they did one right now, 3/4 of it would be so angry because they do they pretty much do it with guys from all over the AL Central. And all these teams have just been so crappy that 3/5 of the pod would easily combine for the biggest angry episode or angry-sode ever recorded. We won't do that to you guys, not yet. And I mean, I'm there with them, and you can follow those guys on Twitter at InvertedW, and I would highly, highly recommend it. And hopefully, you don't stop listening to us to listen to them, but you definitely can listen to both of us at Dr. Vox Humana. That's DrVoxHumana. Must follow. Royals fan. His co-host Nick is at Mighty MPLS. That obviously watches the Twins. And his other co-host, Nick, who I forget who he roots for. I think he's an Indians fan, but he's Champagne Caviar. And they do all sorts of things on that show, and it's a great podcast if you're looking for another show to go along with ours and Pine Tar Press. Because, of course, if you're listening at RoyalsPodcast.com, you're getting all of us. But anyways, in other details, tomorrow's Memorial Day, and I'm hoping to get this up in time for that. Otherwise, this commercial will be really for naught. But,
oh, well.
Tomorrow there is a block party at Kelly's Westport Inn and McCoy's Public House. It's the annual block party. I believe they started this last year to celebrate I think it was the 50th of Kelly's and like the 25th or 35th of McCoy's. But, oh, shoot, you know what? I'm going to clinch this commercial because I can't even read the flyer. I swore it said Monday at 8. It says Sunday at 8. I won't get this up by then.
Oh.
All right. Well, anyways, go drink at Kelly's. And there's your commercial. God, we are a trade wreck.
Oh my, we're just reflecting the team that we follow closest. That's all it is.
Yeah. Well, hell. Oh, anyways,
go drink
it. So back to baseball.
You know what? Next year Memorial Day weekend, be ready for a block party.
And they do it every year. They're going to do it every year, and it's a really big deal to them, and it's a great chance to get out to Westport. I love Westport. I mean, of course, it's got its bruises and black eyes, but I mean, for places in Kansas City to go, I don't know. I don't do the 31st Street District, and I sure in hell don't do downtown. And I love Westport, and those McCoy's I don't necessarily get along with their bouncers, but Kelly's is a great place, and McCoy's is a fine bar that makes their own beer, and that's something I'm really big on. If you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, you know I've been tweeting a lot of the beers I've been having out here in Flagstaff, and because they've got a lot of local brews. And if you're not supporting local brews, you're doing your town a disservice. So get out and support Kelly's and McCoy's, because Kelly's always has at least a couple of Boulevards on tap, and McCoy's has their own, and usually Kelly's will even have some McCoy's on around these block parties. They usually throw a McCoy's tap in too, so it's a great chance if you go to Kelly's or if you go to McCoy's to try some great
beers.
What's
fantastic this time of year is the ginger shandy at McCoy's. That's fantastic right now. Oh, that'd be great. That would hit the spot. It's like 13 of them right now. It would feel great.
Well, I had a crap day at work, too, and I told Megan, I said, I'm going to go feed this dog, and then I'll meet you for dinner because she's working tonight. And I said, and then I'm going to go home, and I'm going to have a beer or 12, and I'm not even kidding. I said, I have a six-pack, but there's a local – I love college towns. Mike, I love college towns,
oh,
let me tell you.
I understand.
I never spent enough time in Lawrence or Columbia, I'll tell you that. But living out here, I can walk down the street to this local market, and they sell beer by the can for like $1.25, and it's good stuff. It's like I paid $2 for a 16-ounce can of what's it called? Sierra Nevada, their limited edition IPA. And one of my buddies is and that's just over in California, which is one state over from here, so I suppose they get that stuff ccheaper. But yeah, I had their extra EPA for $2 in a can, and I told one of my buddies who's a big Royals fan, and he's a beer distributor, and he was like, man, $2 for that can was cheap, and I can just walk down there and pick me up a few local brews and call it good. But that's not baseball, that's beer.
Yeah.
So let's get back to baseball. But you should go
do it. We really have to get back to baseball.
No, I mean, we're happy now.
Man.
We're talking
about
beer
and college campuses, and it's
college campuses.
It's sundress
and
season,
course,
and
I was going to thank you. That's where I was going.
Oh
next.
God, I mean, whew.
Although this town is more like Columbia than it is like Lawrence, people here go home. For whatever reason. I mean, summers here are gorgeous. It's like 80 to 90 degrees every day, no humidity, and nothing going on, but all the tourists start coming through to go to the Grand Canyon and what have you. But in Lawrence, everybody stays all year long. I mean, it's a town that just lives the way it is all year long. Nobody seems to leave, whereas this town seems to be a little bit more like Columbia, and people seem to go home, and it's a little more quiet for the locals, but it's still pretty busy here too, because Friday night you couldn't get parking downtown. But, yeah, go have beer. Go yep. drink. We're for drinking as long as you can take a designated driver.
Right. Stay home. That's fine. That's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, go visit Kelly's anyways. So Ned's got to go.
Yeah.
I don't even, in my mind, I had like this big rant that I wanted to go into, but it's all been said.
Yeah.
It's all been said. I don't know what you got to look at to see that this team's got a problem. You know, if you follow Rainey on Twitter, and if you don't, I don't know why you don't. He's a great man. He gets it. You know, he was one of the original Royals podcasters out there, and he actually did it kind of on a national level. And you know, he even said that never in his tenure in Milwaukee was Ned this bad, and yet he got fired. Yet here we sit,
yeah.
And you and I both expected him to be fired by this point because LA's not a good team. They've got a lot of talent, but they're not a good team, and we're getting stomped.
Yeah,
stomped at home.
Yeah.
I mean, what's going on?
Well, and beat by guy, you know, Joe Blanton was 0-6, lost to Joe Blanton. Lost today to Jerome Williams, who is a nothing. He's a nobody. Lost to Jordan Lyles in Houston, 6-plus ERA. Lost to Jared Parker, 6-plus ERA. Lost yesterday to Billy Buckner, former Kansas City Royal. Guy was designated for assignment after throwing 5 shutout innings against the Royals. That's the class of pitchers that the Royals cannot hit. And they can't, since in the last 20 games they've averaged 3.5 runs a game. That's not going to do it. You know, I feel so bad for guys like James Shields and Ervin Santana who go out there and they throw 8 innings and they give up 2 runs and it's not enough. You know, you look at those 2 games in Oakland where Shields makes 2 bad pitches that get hit for homers. They weren't even that bad of pitches. You know, for at least one of those. And the Royals only scored once, and he lost. Just terrible. Santana, same kind of thing. 1 inning, a couple of balls that carry a little bit more. 2 runs, Royals lost. You know, it's just, it's got to be frustrating for those guys to come into this situation, come into this team, be seen as leaders, and to have a team that cannot score. And some of that is line of construction. Some of it's just plain struggles. You know, but I think at the same time, Ned Yost has to figure out how to get it out of his players. And if that's sitting them down and giving them some tough love, that's what he's got to do. He's got to know which players can take that kind of criticism. And all you hear him talk about is how all he can do is be positive and be supportive. You know, that's crap. That's crap. I mean, you're the manager. You're the guy that needs to be steering the ship here. And if he can't get it done, then they got to find somebody who can, you know, and if that also corresponds with some moves from the minor leagues to get some guys, you know, that's fine. You got to do something. And right now the Royals are sitting on their hands acting like, you know, just waiting it out is going to make it work. And it's clearly not. Maybe after the first week it was fine to be, you know, waiting it out, see what happens. But, you know, after the second week and now we're into the third week of this, no, you got to do something. And, you know, Ned, it just seems like there's a disconnect between what Ned Yost's philosophy and his approach is to what actually wins baseball games and gets players to actually perform. And they got to do something. I really expected him to be fired after this game because, you know, Josh Vernier from 610 reported that David Glass was in a meeting with him before the game. They were in there for 25, 30 minutes. You know, it kind of seemed like it was that the kind of thing that Trey Hillman ran into where he knew he was losing his job. They gave him one more game to go out and coach. And, you know, the Royals won Trey Hillman's game. Ned Yost ended up, you know, losing today, still has a job.
And, you know, and everybody wants everybody fired, and that's fine. And I just – give me your opinion on this, and because I'm going to be biased because I like the guy as a person. But how bad – what kind of a bad idea would it be? And I'm going to go somewhere with this, but would it be a bad idea to maybe clear out the front office in that you get rid of Dayton and you get rid of Ned, which I think all needs done – but then you stay in-house and you at least put an interim label on the AGM there in Kansas City and see if you can get anything going, or is it time that you just got to clear out the whole thing?
I kind of think you have to clear the whole thing out just because you look at what they've done. I mean, you know, guys like J.J. Piccolo, they are with Dayton Moore for a reason, because there's a shared philosophy there in a lot of ways. And, you know, I don't think that you're going to be getting anything much different. Clearly, in a lot of ways, the pitching development side has not been there. You know, the Royals have gotten starts from maybe two homegrown starters since Dayton Moore has been around. You know, or at least guys that Dayton Moore drafted. That's just inexcusable in 7 years. You can't do that. You have to get something else out of that. You know, the hitters, you look at where they're at now. Eric Hosmer looked like he was going to be that MVP candidate after 2011. And then over the last, you know, year and 2 months into this season, you know, he doesn't look like that. He looks like he can hold his own, but there's no power. And, you know, Mike Moustakas has had basically two or three good months in the big leagues. Look at Alcides Escobar. He's regressed. You know, it's just, I think you really have to go through and start from scratch, kind of like what the Tampa Bay Rays did. Bring in some guys who are going to do something different than what the organization's doing now. You know, go find those guys who are going to be able to take a walk. You know, throughout the organization, they really don't go for that. Go out and allow for guys who are going to be long toss guys or who, you know, have alternative types of training, you know, philosophies, so that, you know, you're not running into guys who have injuries or guys who hit that wall at Double A.
But in the same breath, and again, I'm a J.J. Piccolo fan, so I'm going to throw that out there, that he has been very good to us and very good to the show. And so I'm a fan. But he was looked at for the Houston job. Obviously, there was something they didn't like there. And that's fair to look at and say, you know, what did Houston see? But at the same time, you're saying, you know, maybe he has these same thought processes as him. But don't you always have the same thought processes as your boss? I mean, sure, there's some groupthink that goes involved, and they're looking for some other things from him. But at the end of the day, it's Dayton Moore's show.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and sure, if it was Piccolo's show, what else could we see? You know, and at least that would get you till the end of the season. You could look at it there. And I truly do believe that David Glass does not like losing, and he's tired of losing. I truly believe that, because this is a man that's never lost in his life. He's always been a winner. He is a multimillionaire because he's a winner. He knows how to win in business. And I think he's tired of losing in baseball, and that's why he spent the $80 million this offseason that he did, and committed to doing what he did, and it still didn't work out. And so now he's looking at it going, I need butts in seats, and I know there's going to be nobody there in September if we don't get some wins. So you got to start cleaning out house, and maybe Piccolo could do it. But then you get into, we've talked with people, and I'm not going to name names, and some of our friends and our connections have connections down in Tampa Bay, and you know, there's a lot of anger coming out of the Rays right now that the Royals minor league system had Patrick Leonard screwed up, they have Will Myers screwed up, and they're trying to fix this. And if that is truly what is going on in Tampa Bay, and if there is any truth to that, then you know that Tampa Bay is telling those same things to other organizations, mm-hmm. and those other organizations are telling that to their GMs, and then you can't trade for players because nobody wants your minor league stuff, which you have this great minor league system, supposedly, but nobody wants your stuff because your players are all screwed up. They're not amounting to anything in the big leagues. You don't have enough major league talent to trade for anything. Your major league talent's screwed mm-hmm. up. So how do you make this team work? Because you can't go out and spend $170 million or you know, you can't spend Yankee money in Kansas City. Not under the way baseball is right now. Until baseball has a salary cap and floor, you can't spend like the Yankees. Not that it would work, because look at the Yankees right now. Outside of catching lightning in a bottle with Bobby Abreu, they've, you know, had their problems too. They've got more money on the DL than
a lot
half
of
the teams in baseball have on their 40-man roster.
It's
you
crazy.
Know, and so it's just and it's just time to clean house. It's time to move on. This team isn't going to work out. This isn't even a 500 team like I was so low on. And I predicted, and everybody else was higher than me, you know, at RoyalsPodcast.com. Everybody was higher than me. And this isn't a 500 team. And this is why earlier this year, people like, you know, were warning, you know, that, you know, folks like Scobie, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. People like Scobes15 on Twitter, Kevin Scobie, good friend of our show, friend of the program, great writer on Kings of Kaufman and does a Monday morning rant that is absolutely money and is a must read if you have time. And, you know, he said, just wait till Memorial Day. Wait till Memorial Day and let's see where this team is. Because we want to believe.
Yeah.
But then you do wait till Memorial Day and you look. And look at where we're at. It's Memorial Day. And this is where we're at. And a month ago, we were talking that this was a legitimate first-place team and all this. And they looked like
yeah,
it.
They did.
And all of a sudden, it's all the wheels have come off. And now they're not. So, you know what? I love Jeff Francoeur. I think he's funny. I think he's a good guy. I think he was very good for this team last year. But it's in the last 2 years, in fact. But it's not working anymore. So it's time to, you know, you're obviously not going to get something for him in trade, or it would have been done already. Or if you have any offers for trade, you've got to take whatever you can get.
Yeah.
Jeff Francoeur, nice knowing you. It's Gerard and David Lowe time. We're going that direction. Bye-bye. You know, people are talking about a Moose demotion possibly coming up because he was benched all weekend. He never was even put in as a pinch hitter. He's hitting below 200, you know, but it's not just him. Why is Hosmer getting a pass? I mean, he's got to get fixed, and if you can't fix him at the major league level, then send him down and get him fixed. And I've never, ever been a person that's been for sending people down to get him fixed. I have never been that guy. You can go back through these shows. You can check my Twitter. But until recently with Moose and Hosmer, because it's broken. And it's got to be fixed. And if you have to literally almost swap teams between Omaha and Kansas City to mix up this roster enough to get anything working, that's what you got to do. Because the Royals are going to St. Louis, and then they have St. Louis at home, and then it's Texas. And Texas is a hell of a lot better than L.A.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at some point, you got to do something. The answer is, what do you do?
Yeah, I think you're exactly – I mean, Moose has to go down. I want him to be good, and I think he will be good. And it's just he's not right now. And they're talking about how they don't want to do anything with him because he still has his confidence. Well, you know, what did you do this weekend? You sat him twice against no-name pitchers. You wouldn't put him in to pinch hit against a right-handed hitter in a game situation. If he still has his confidence after that, my goodness, you know, that guy needs to be, you know, out of the Victoria's Secret shows trying to pick up three or four at a time, because that guy's got to have the most confidence in the world, because he has absolutely nothing on his stats to indicate that he should have any confidence right now. If he does, great, you know, good for him. But at a certain point, they've got to just say, look, I understand that you're confident. You know, we've got to see something else. We have to see more results. And that's when you send him down and you get him right. And I don't know. I'm just at a loss. You know, these guys should be better than this. Hosmer, just the same. He's at least making contact. He's making pretty good contact, but they're all singles. You know, he's walking a reasonable amount, but I don't think anybody really fears him. You look at how often Billy Butler's walked in front of him, and that's not a coincidence. You know, it's not a coincidence that he's seeing five pitches in at bat and only one of them's even close to hittable. And it's probably got Billy Butler frustrated too, because
it definitely does. And let me go on that for a second. You know, you got people that are mad at Billy Butler. It's 2011 all over again. You know, everybody's upset with Billy Butler all of a sudden. But what do you expect out of him? He's trying to be nine players.
Right.
He's the only guy on the team hitting. And what do you expect? The guy is just over. He's trying to be more than he is, and he shouldn't be, and he shouldn't try to be. But he wants to win, and he cares about this team. And if you've ever talked to Billy Butler, you'll get that. And I know a lot of people have problems with Billy Butler because he doesn't sign enough autographs at spring training or whatever. But as a baseball player, he is a professional hitter. That is what he does. Mm-hmm. And he is so messed up right now because he doesn't have anybody around him that can swing a damn bat.
Yeah, the only one who can is Alex Gordon, who hits in front of him. So once you get past those two, it's smooth sailing the rest of the way. I mean, Perez has hit okay, but he only has one homer. So, you know, it's not like you're really worried about that. The problem, a big problem with this team is that if they're not stringing three or four hits together, they're not going to score a run. You know, you look at one of the runs that they scored today, you know, you start out with a base hit, you get another hit, Then Lorenzo Cain grounds into a double play. You know, it was almost a triple play, but he's fast enough to beat it out. Then David Lowe hits a triple. So they got two hits, a stolen base, and a triple. They scored one run. You know, you tell that sequence to anybody else, you're expecting, you know, all of those hits to come home, and they got one. So it's just ridiculous. You've got, you know, two good bats in the lineup. You know, both of those guys were drafted by Allard Baird, which I think is important to point out, and not Dayton Moore. So, yeah, you've got to have other people around you to do that, and if that means that you have to go down and you know, pull somebody up who has a little more fire and wants to prove themselves, hey, go for it. You know, at this point, the Royals are free-falling, and you got to do something. You know, one of the things that Scobie wrote about on Kings of Coffin last Monday was, you know, analyzing Eric Hosmer's swing, and you know, you look at him, he's way off balance, and I think that's where he's losing a lot of his power. Yeah, send him down. You know, get him right. They still have the rights to Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas through 2017. It's only 2013. If sending them down for 3-4 weeks now is going to make them better in 2014, 2015, 2016, you've got to do it. If leaving them up now only means that they're going to be reaching 80% of their potential because they could never actually take the time to make those adjustments and get themselves back into the right, you know, frame of mind and the right hitting stance and the right approach, then, you know, what good is even having them? You know, if they're only 80% of the person that you think you can, then you're not developing your players right.
I don't know what to do as a fan. And this is one thing to make very clear. Just because I live in Flagstaff doesn't mean I stopped being a Royals fan. I didn't suddenly jump on the Diamondbacks wagon. I didn't suddenly become D-backs man or Snake man or whatever
Snake
else
man.
That people have asked me. Oh, my
it's
God,
like...
dude, you don't even – the tweets that I get, it's like – I must be some sort of traveling sideshow act. I mean, I kind of was, but I mean, the only that costume has come out of my closet once. I wore it for we had a derby thing yesterday, and we had some theme games, and one was superheroes versus villains, and I wore my cape. And I was going to wear the whole thing, but I didn't. I was the only announcer, and I wasn't going to have time to change, so I wore the cape. That was the only time that thing's come out of my closet since we moved. And, yeah, I still have the suit, and I would love to put it on today. I'm not going to put it on just because we're winning, though. I'm going to put it on because, you know, there's a reason to, or I go to, you know, maybe if I go to a game in L.A. or something just for fun, I'd do it. But, you know, it's not coming out this year, and it's probably not coming out next year. But and it's not because I'm embarrassed of this team, because I wear a Royals shirt literally every day. 90% of my closet is Royals clothes. When I go to work in the morning, I wear an undershirt. That undershirt is white, and it's almost always a Royals shirt. I have four of them. And so almost always it's a Royals undershirt. Like today I have on the Royals Hot Dog Derby giveaway shirt from a couple years ago. And I go out after work and I take my work clothes off and I wear these shirts and I get the drunk asshole that's walking down the street that says, oh, Royals suck. And I say, well, yeah, you suck because you're a no-life loser, but I root for a shitty team. And then I go out to eat last night and – I met the bar and the guy goes, oh, your team's coming on. And he thought he just glanced at the colors and he thought that I wanted to watch the Dodgers Cardinals game. And I mean, and so then that led to a conversation of, well, he apologized after he noticed the logo. And he said, well, I said, yeah, my team's awful. They lost again today. I don't really want to talk about it. And he said, well, if it makes you feel any better, I'm a Trailblazers fan. I said, well, if there's anybody that can kind of understand the pain that the Royals go through, it's the Blazers, but at least you've had a playoff appearance in my lifetime. Granted, you drafted, you know, Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan and
Greg Oden over Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah, that came
Man,
up last night.
Could be
and,
worse, I guess.
I mean, so that's rough. And yeah, you know, I'm interested in the Diamondbacks because I live here. But honestly, I couldn't tell you what the score of the Diamondbacks team was yesterday. I couldn't tell you what their record is. I'm going to do a Diamondbacks podcast because there's a couple of guys, actually fan-sided guys, that want to do one. I have the equipment. I'm going to turn it on and say, welcome to the show. Now listen to these guys talk about Diamondbacks baseball because I don't really know much about them. You know, I know about the former Royals and the guys, you know, like Brandon McCarthy. I follow his starts because I want him to do well, and he hasn't. And I'm glad the Royals didn't sign him after all. You know, but I follow the Diamondbacks, but I grew up in central Nebraska. I grew up watching Cardinals and Royals baseball, and I, for whatever reason, decided that the Royals were my team. And granted, I grew up in the 80s, so it may have not have been the worst decision in the world.
Yeah.
But and I've stuck to that, and then I've lived in Colorado for 7 years, and I root for the Rockies. I saw, like, 8 of their first 10 opening days, you know, and then I moved to to Kansas City and saw several six or seven opening days in a row there the last few years. And so I'm a baseball fan. So, of course, I'm going to follow the Diamondbacks, but it's not like I've just given up on the Royals. When I leave the house to go feed my friend's dogs, I'm throwing on a Royals jersey because it's what I wear. And I don't care, you know, they're my team regardless of how bad they are, but it's frustrating to watch them be this bad. They don't need to be this bad. There's no reason for it. Every team in baseball, I believe, except the Pirates in the last 8 years have made the playoffs. And there's a chance that the Pirates are going to make it before the Royals do. And the Astros are going to turn it around before the Royals make it to the playoffs because their front office is committed to it and they know how to do it. And they've got one of the best prospect minds in the world in their organization. And they found him in an unlikely place at Baseball Prospectus.
Yeah. Amazing what happens when you go out of your comfort zone as an organization.
And maybe that's why they didn't like Piccolo. Again, we're guessing, and again, I love J.J. Piccolo, but maybe he was too old school, and that would be in line with Dayton Moore.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we don't, again, we like to follow numbers and stats and things that make sense and truth here on the podcast. You know, we'll all never forget Mike getting that idiot set up on making up that trade and getting that guy to carry it. We don't do that here. We don't speculate on what trades there might be or make up stuff to pump up our numbers. We're not like that. We're here to give you the most honest, you know, Royals information. And there's people that say that if you wanted to listen to something, you know, if you want to hear the positive spin on the Royals and you follow me on Twitter and you listen to my podcast, and I don't think that's fair at all. I think I've been very honest about it. Yeah, I probably have a more positive than a lot of people, but that's me. If you've ever met me, you will notice that I'm a positive person. I always try to find the silver lining, but really I'm to a point where there isn't one. I'm so frustrated right now. I'm regretting that I ever bought MLB TV because the only thing I use it for is that I bought the minor league add-on and so that I can watch Omaha and Northwest again. I'm tired of doing that.
Yeah. It's been too many years of doing that.
I mean, I don't know what the Royals expect out of us, and I don't know how people keep going to the stadium at this point. And even if I would have stayed in Kansas City, I wasn't renewing my season tickets, and I wouldn't have bought more than 10 or 15 games this coming year.
Yeah, I have like five. I've been to maybe three games this year, and it's like, well, okay. I mean, I'm still a fan. It's, you know, I want them to do well, and that's why it's, I think, so frustrating for so many people because we want to see success. You know, if people didn't care, they wouldn't get angry. And there's a lot of anger out there. But at a certain point, you know, that anger does turn into apathy. And that's kind of where you start losing fans. And that's where a lot of those fans left in, you know, the mid-2000s, where they left, you know, just before Allard Baird was fired. Because the Royals were so bad. And even then, they didn't have anything in the farm system. They had Greinke, Gordon, and Butler, and that was it.
And that's where Baird failed. I mean, he drafted okay, but he didn't get enough. You know, he got those. He actually had a few people that he saw some legitimate major league talent out of, but he didn't have enough there.
You know, I think it would have been really interesting to see if you could switch those two regimes. Have, you know, what would happen if Dayton Moore was the GM before Allard Baird and Allard Baird took over, and if Allard Baird was able to get, you know, more support from David Glass than he did. Because, I mean, they shredded their development budget. They were going for college seniors, guys who had no leverage, and they offered them $1,000. That's your signing bonus. You know, and a lot of times you get what you pay for. If you're going for guys who are 22, soon to be 23, you know, guys who, you know, can't hold out to actually make more, guys who didn't leave school as a junior because of their draft stock, well, you're going to get guys who aren't all that great. And so you end up with a farm system that's built out of those guys, and it's really tough to get, you know, anybody. You know, the three best players that came out of that were Gordon, a second overall pick, Butler, a first-round pick, and Greinke, a top-10 pick. And, you know, it's because that was just the talent that they were able to get. Everybody else, they had no depth. They had no, you know, other standouts. They didn't get lucky on anybody either. And so, you know, you add that up over a period of years, you're pretty much left with nothing. And when you also can't spend money, when you've got to trade your three best outfielders for whatever you can get, yeah, you're in a tough position. And that's kind of what Allard Baird ran into. Dayton Moore compared to Baird is, my goodness, Allard Baird would be jumping up for joy if he could get that kind of support from David Glass. And so, you know, it all goes together. The team should be better than they are at this point. They should have been better a couple of years ago than they are at this point. And, there's just changes that have to happen.
And they haven't.
And they haven't.
And they're not.
Yeah. I mean,
there's changes that need to happen this week, and I don't think we're – I hope that before this show is published, which will probably be sometime Sunday night or hopefully, if not Monday, it probably won't get up until either early Tuesday or late Wednesday. But hopefully by the time I get this show up, that there has been major changes in this organization, and a lot of this negativity that we're spewing will have all been for naught, and they'll have done the things we need them to do, and it'll be interesting to see what direction this team's going. But I don't believe that'll happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that they've said to indicate that it will. I mean, Ned Yost went on, he was talking about the third base tree. He was like, well, I saw Chipper Jones come up and hit right away. I saw Ryan Braun come up and hit right away. And that's it. But whenever I've seen a player that I really felt with conviction was going to be a star, I've never been wrong. And that's what he said. And I was like, okay, you can say that, but how can I prove that? Which guys did you say were going to be a star that you know, you weren't just paying lip service to in the media? You know, that's fine, but just because Ryan Braun came out right away, that indicates that, yeah, these guys can jump right out. You know, they can be stars right away. If they're the guy that you think that they are, yeah, you can do that. I mean, look at, Alex Gordon's a good example. I don't think he's the best example because he was college player of the year, then he was minor league player of the year. And, his first 2 years, he was pretty good. I mean, he was a league average kind of guy, which isn't what you want to see, but it's still better than what Hosmer's been. It's better than what Moustakas has been. He had 2 years of injuries. He went down to the minors. He came back, reinvented himself in the outfield. Now he's one of the best players in baseball, period. You look at Mike Trout, who is probably the best player now or going to be over the next 10 years. He came up and struggled in the major leagues. They sent him back down. And then last year they finally brought him up after the first month, and he, put up 10 WAR in about 5 months. Just, an excellent season by anybody's standards. So, sometimes you've got to make those moves, even if they're difficult. You've got to make a change, even if it's going to be painful, because long term, that's what it takes. You have to do it. If they're just keeping these guys around now and letting them flounder, well, how does that help them next year? How does that help them the year after? Are they thinking just let's get through 2013 and see where we're at? Or are they going to be able to say, hey, let's float around and have maybe a rough stretch, but a month from now we're going to be much better because we're going to get these guys back. And, really, when you look at what the Royals have done now, they're 4-16 in their last 20 games. I think that, Anthony Cerutelli or Irving Falu or Johnny Giovitella or Xavier Nady or, this guy or that guy could have easily been in the lineup and had a similar stretch. So you basically have wasted a couple of weeks trying to convince yourself that these guys are just going to magically turn it around. And they haven't. And it just doesn't work that way. So they got to do something. They have to figure it out. And, I'm kind of surprised that it didn't happen after this weekend.
That's pretty much everything that I could say. And at this point, I think we'll take a break and
have some,
get ourselves
some
together.
$2 beers.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some cheap beer on there, and then we'll come back and we'll do a minor league wraparound, and we're going to kind of jump around on that because Mike's got some stuff, I'm sure, and I've got some stuff, and we'll be right back on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup.
No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We're going to try to be positive here for about 15 minutes as we wrap up the show. We're going to talk a little bit about the minor leagues, and of course, this of course comes from an idea that we had back when we were on the radio on 1510, and Mike's going to take us around the horn and tell us what's going on in the minor leagues. He usually picks out one or two players and brings up some interesting facts about the minor leagues and takes us from there.
Ahead, I would, I think a lot of the guys that I've kind of been looking at are a lot of the same names that we've heard of a lot over the last few years. I mean, Chris Dwyer is still pitching really well in Omaha, which is great to see because there were so many questions, throughout his time with the Royals, and especially since he hit Double A, about how well he was going to be able to pitch and how, you know, good he was. Now he's actually starting to put it together. Through 10 starts, he's got a 2.83 ERA in 57 innings, and he's actually controlling the walks, which has been the biggest problem. And I think a lot of people at this point, they would have figured that he would be regressing. You know, he had a couple of rough starts in there, but his last start was fantastic. This is on the 23rd. He threw 8 innings, gave up just 1 run, had 6 strikeouts. You know, very good start for him, so he's another guy. You can kind of throw him in with the guys like Will Smith now. Maybe Nate Adcock is guys if there are injuries and the Royals need to, you know, get a long reliever up or if they need to get a spot starter. He's another option now. And I think at the start of the year, that wouldn't have been the case. So it's good to see one of those guys who was a top 10 prospect in the organization for a couple of years who kind of faded actually come around and show something. He's still pretty old. I mean, for a prospect, he's 25 years old, which is kind of getting up there before, you know, you can really kind of expect anything from him. But, you know, it's better to see him doing well now at 25 than him never doing anything at any point. So we'll take what we can get there. Johnny Giovitella homered the other night. You know, we talked about him being at third base, and since he's been doing that, you know, he's hitting okay. He's not hitting quite as well as he has in years past, but overall his numbers look good. You know, I still think that he's somebody who would jump in right now and help out. You know, if nothing else, he can't be any worse than Mike Moustakas. So we got that going for us. Good friend of ours, Jason Adam. We've talked a lot about the struggles that he started the year with. Mostly those have turned around. In the last couple of weeks, he has thrown 30 innings. This is over his last 5 starts, 30 innings. So you're looking at 6 innings a start. And he's given up only 9 earned runs. So that's 2.7 ERA. That, you know, his ERA is still up there after 9 starts because his first few were so bad. They were not good at all. But they've gotten better. And it seems like he's starting to make some of those adjustments at the Double-A level to where, you know, he's getting himself back on track. He's still got some work to do. It's 7.15 ERA, so it's not great. But, again, things are going in the right direction for him. And Double-A is not an easy place to pitch.
No, because they've got we've talked about stream. A lot. They've got a bit of a jet stream there.
Yeah. A couple guys in Wilmington are really pitching well, which isn't all that surprising because it is Wilmington, and that place is a cavern. It's huge. Raleigh Stadium is notoriously pitcher-friendly. But you know, you look at a kind of a guy you don't really hear that much about is Spencer Patton. And he's been mostly used in relief. He's struck out 40 guys in 29 innings, has a 1.86 ERA. Another name that we have heard a lot more about is Kyle Smith, who through nine starts, he's got a 2.06 ERA, 51 strikeouts in 48 innings pitched. That's very good. John Lamb had a pretty good start the other day, went seven innings, gave up no runs, three hits, one walk, and eight strikeouts. He's still kind of getting his way back after Tommy John surgery. The main positive out of all of this is that he's only walked 10 batters in 41 innings, and he still struck out 35. Most of the reports are saying that he's sitting around 85 to 89 miles an hour on his fastball, which is still pretty low. So, you know, I don't know if that velocity is ever going to come back, and sometimes for players with Tommy John surgery, it doesn't. So, you know, you hope that he can figure that out. I'm not sure. I don't know, but he's at least been pitching better, at least his last start. And earlier today, Raul Mondesi, also known as Adalberto Mondesi, he hit two homers. He's 17 years old, you know, so he doesn't turn 18 until the end of July. So for him to be doing well at full season ball is pretty impressive. You know, he's somebody we were talking between segments that he's going to be a pretty exciting guy to follow. He's got his father that played in the big leagues for a number of years and was a top prospect and a rookie of the year. That, I think, is going to help him. You know, he's got five homers this season at this point. He's hitting okay. Mostly he's getting on base pretty well. At least in the last 10 games, he's gotten on base so about 40% of the time. Or nope, I'm wrong. I'm looking at the numbers wrong. He hasn't done that. But he hit two. He did hit two more homers today. And again, he's 17, so the upside on him is substantial. This is a guy who's probably going to be a top 20 overall prospect by the end of the year, no matter what he does at Lexington. I mean, there's just, you know, the sky's the limit for him. Now, we'll see if the Royals screw him up like everybody else they've done, but that's at least a couple of years down the line, so we'll see.
Well, and hopefully being from a baseball family, his dad can keep him right.
Yeah, and I think that's probably something that is probably going to be, you know, he's going to have the experience of his dad there, plus he's going to have the experience of seeing it. You know, he's been able to go there and see how his dad approached things as he was growing up, you know, able to be around other players. So I think it's going to be okay. I hope so, because, I mean, he's a guy that you really want to see do well, you know, because of the hype. I mean, you want to see that hype, you know, you want to see it rewarded when they make a signing like that and when they pitch a guy like that. So
it could be one of those situations like Bryce Harper where he's in the major leagues by 19, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, he's got some work to do there, but, I mean, you know, for a lot of those guys, once it clicks, and you can't really tell, but, you know, they'll let you know when they're ready. If he starts hitting 300 at every level and putting 20 homers out, and he's at a 20-homer pace at a shortstop, that's pretty good. You know, that's going to get you an early look if it seems like something that they can benefit from.
Now, if he can only play second base tomorrow, we'd be set.
You know, he probably could if we're talking about Getz, but that's another story.
A couple other notes, staying with guys that are friends of the program. Brooks Pounders is still doing work at AA, too. He, of course, was fake Ned, but Chris Candler's favorite player because he's Brooks Pounders, you know, he's double plural, and he's been doing a lot of, he started out as a starter, but he's been doing a lot of relief work, but he's 1-2 with a 3.44 ERA. He's had four starts, all four of his starts have been pretty short from what I can tell. Yeah. And but he has one save in 36.2 innings pitch. He's got a 28-11 strikeout to walk rate, so it's a pretty good number. So hopefully he can at least be, if nothing else, be a great guy out of the pen, and that's probably where his future lies with this team.
I would think so. I mean, he's a big dude, and sometimes you can worry about conditioning for that. And if the guy can go out there and give you two you know, big effort innings, that's something you can probably get something out of him at the big league level. You know, he's never been considered a big prospect. He's just kind of a guy that we ended up getting in the Yumaiko Navarro trade just because we wanted to get Yumaiko Navarro out of the organization because he was
He was drafted in the second round by the Pirates in 2009 and then out of high school. And he was 9-2 with a 1.96 ERA, 91 strikeouts over 64 and a third innings as a senior. And then he was, of course, like you said, along him and Diego Gorgoris, who I'm not even sure if is still in the organization or not, were both picked up from the Pirates for Yumaiko Navarro, who was supposedly a bad
he doesn't
guy.
Have a good reputation at all, and he's bounced around. You keep following him. I think he's been in like five organizations in the last 2 years. And there's usually
notoriously we traded Mike Avilas for Navarro.
God, how much would you like to have Mike Avilas back right now?
Because he could play second tomorrow.
Or we could play third tomorrow.
This is
true. I mean, he could do any of that.
I was okay with the trade because Avilas was really nothing, but he's been so functional.
He's hit really well, and Cleveland's running away, and just they're playing great, and he's a big part of it. And it's kind of frustrating to see that happen.
But Brooks was the player or pitcher of the week for the Carolina League in 8-20-2012. So, little note about Brooks.
Yeah, he finished last year really, really strong. He looked really good last year towards the end, so... Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all for him to be pitcher of the week towards the end.
In other news, we're going to eventually have Matt Fields on, who is a guy that Mike brought to my attention, and he's an interesting fella.
Yep.
He quit baseball because of his fiance and went about and did other things and then came back to baseball, and we talked, you know, with Eric about him, and Eric was all positive on him, and he seems like a really good guy. And if you go and you look at the video highlights for Northwest Arkansas, it's like Fields is every other one.
Yeah,
I swear.
He hits the ball a ton. I mean, he's a big guy. He's 6'5", 235, and he can hit the ball legitimate 500 feet.
He changed his Twitter handle to Matt 500 FT Fields.
Yeah. This is crazy.
Which his old Twitter handle was hard, so that was a good move. Very nice guy. Like I said, he was ill, and so we didn't get him on. But he was part of the 20-inning record-setting game for Springfield and Northwest Arkansas a couple of weeks ago. I was trying to find that game. Must have been at the end of April, I think, already.
I was in Hayes when it happened. So it was one of the last 2 weekends.
Okay, let me find it here real quick. But I wanted to bring that up because I think I found it. Because he actually ended up getting the win as a pitcher. He pitched 3 innings. Yeah. The game is the longest game in history, both time and inning-wise, for both Springfield and Northwest Arkansas. It doesn't come close to – I believe the longest game in minor league history is 33 innings. So it didn't come close to that. I mean, it only got 20 innings. But Matt Fields is 1-0 with a 3 ERA. He gave up a couple of runs. The kind of the funny part about that game, and if you haven't – it happened on 5/11/2013, if you want to go look at the stats from it. It's actually kind of cool. And it's a shame you can't watch like old games like that, because I literally – the Royals lost that day. And I turned off the Royals game.
Surprise.
And I was like, I still want to watch baseball. Right. I still want to watch baseball. And so I turned on the Double-A game, because I've always kind of had a following for Northwest Arkansas, mostly because of Eric and what have you. But I turned that game on first, and it was interesting. But it was like in the ninth inning, and it was tied. Okay, so I turned it on in the ninth, and then it went into the tenth, and it was the top of the inning. So I was like, okay, well they can't win it, you know. If something great happens, then they'll replay it, and I'll watch the bottom of the inning. But I want to flip over to Omaha because Omaha was coming back and ended up losing that game as well. But I wanted to watch the ninth inning of that game, so I flipped over, watched the end of the Omaha game, turned back to the Northwest Arkansas game and watched that whole game. By the time that game got over, there were national writers, not bloggers, national writers that had picked up talking about the Northwest Arkansas game, talking about a Double-A game that had absolutely no meaning. I mean, Northwest is 13-20, Springfield is 17-16. Neither of the teams are that great. There was no premier prospects involved at the time. By that point, it was just a ball game, you know. But 20 innings seems to get everybody's attention that likes baseball. And I remember chatting with one of the guys out of Chicago, and I was like, yeah, I turned it on in the ninth. And he's like, that's funny. You've seen two full games since turning it on for one inning. And it was a pretty crazy game. I was trying to find here the catcher, and I'm trying to remember what his name was.
One Gratterall was catching for the Nationals, I think.
Yes. He caught all 20 innings of that game. And in the 19th, he hit the game-winning home run. And you know somewhere the dugout, he's like, my knees are tired. Yeah. Let's end this. I just want to go
home.
That's
his only homer of the year, too. It's a great
and,
thing.
Yeah, Gratterall, I think he was 1-9 in that game? Hold on, let me look
maybe,
this up
if
here.
That was his only hit in the game, that'd be awesome.
He was 2-9, he scored one run.
Yeah.
And had two RBIs.
Well, there you go.
And it came at the end of the game. But, I mean, there are some awesome stat lines on this game. Their DH was 0-7, and then the guy that came in for him to play left field because they lost the DH at one point because it didn't matter.
Position players were pitching. And
yeah, and so the guy that came in for him went 0-3, so their leadoff position went 0-10. It sounds like something. Their Royals ready, obviously.
Well, and Ruben Gote was pitching, too.
Right. I was
going
to get to
Royal.
That. Was, or no, I guess he didn't take the loss. Andre Perez, a catcher for Springfield, took the loss. And the funny thing is, a couple of my Twitter followers were at that game, and I kept saying, they keep showing these same guys on the Jumbotron. They must be the only guys left. Because the video you get on the minor league game is what they show on the Jumbotron. So you get, like, all the little mid-inning stuff and everything. And then they pipe in the home team's radio broadcast, I believe, because we had Springfield's radio broadcast. That much I do know. But McClure went 0-9. There's a Royals prospect for you and a Twitter follow. But let's see. Canham came in from left field to pitch, and he pitched 3 innings. He was 2-7 in that game, and he pitched 3 scoreless innings. And then he came out, and he went to first base, and Matt Fields came in and pitched 3 innings. And he was 2-5 in that game with 2 RBIs. He had walked 3 times, struck out once. I believe he had a home run in that game, too. And he ended up with the win. And it's just a ridiculous baseball game, and I'm glad it happened to the Royals organization because at least it's something fun to look at.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I think I watched the last 2 innings of that, and it's one of those where once you have the position players in, they're both just, you know, both teams are pretty much just saying, okay, well, if we happen to lose it with this guy in the mound, that's whatever. But you also still kind of want to win it, you know, just because it's kind of cool to have, you know, your position players go out there and do something like that. So it was entertaining, and it's kind of one of those things that you just kind of run into, and you know, when they happen, pay attention to it. I think it's pretty funny.
So all in all, that's what's going on in the minor leagues. And Mike, did you have anything else to add?
Well, we still need to talk about Duffy's rehab start.
Oh, somehow we grazed over that. I'm sorry. I thought you had hit on that.
Nope.
In the, but he pitched 3 innings.
3 innings, 63 pitches. He was on a pitch count of 60. They let him finish off the last batter, so he had 3 extras. Gave up just 2 hits. Ended up, he actually gave up a couple of stolen bases because he did walk a couple of guys. He hit a guy. He had a balk. He struck out 4. You know, for the most part, he looked okay. You know, it's still kind of one of those things where once he's in that setting, you kind of want to see him get his pitch count per inning down. He, you know, threw 25 pitches in the first inning, threw 15 in the next, and then 23 in his final inning. So you want to see that kind of get under control because that is one of the things at the big league level that he struggled with, you know, just keeping his pitch count in a normal spot. But, you know, all in all, I mean, seemed to be throwing pretty well. I didn't see anything as far as, like, a velocity, but all the reports out there are saying that he's kind of in the same area. So he's like 95 to 97 with his fastball, which is very good from the left side. You compare him to what John Lamb's been going through. Lamb's velocity has not come back. Duffy's is definitely back and still there. So, you know, he's got that. Part of the deal is that the rehab assignment is allowed to continue for 30 days. So it could be something that if he has no setbacks and everything looks good, he could be back in Kansas City a month from now. It could be something where they decide to option him to Omaha just to give him more time down there also. You know, some of it is probably going to depend on if anybody's gotten hurt at the big league level or if anybody needs to be moved to the bullpen, if somebody gets designated for assignment or whatever. But, you know, so far, so good for him. I mean, his surgery was performed on June 13th last year, so we're not even a year from it, and he's, you know, on pace to be about a year and 2 weeks after surgery, being right back in the big leagues. So, you know, that's definitely something positive for him. And, you know, we've talked to Duffy enough that we know that he's an excitable guy and he's really fired up for all of this. And, you know, I think you look at his Twitter, he's really grateful to be in this position to, you know, be even close to a return to the big leagues. So, you know, I think just even being able to get out there is a positive. And, you know, they haven't really said when his next start is going to be. I imagine it's going to be 5 days from now, probably still at Northwest Arkansas. So we'll see how he does in the follow-up, and he'll probably get about 70 or 80 pitches at that time.
And I have tried to reach out to him to talk to him again. He's not been real good about getting back to me. He might just be focused, but he hasn't even tweeted in over a day. So I think, you know, it might be something like that. But I've texted him a couple of times since the 5th of April, and I haven't heard back, and I literally mean a couple of times, like twice, because I was going to try to go down to Phoenix and get together with him like we had planned to do on the last interview he was on our show. But, by the way, on the subject of Sal Perez going down, Adam Moore getting a shot in the big leagues, who would have ever saw that coming?
Well, he got a little bit last year, but
that's true.
But, I mean, yeah, you really wouldn't figure on it. I think it's mostly that they know that it's only going to be a couple of days. He's a guy that if they put him on waivers, nobody's going to claim him. You know, if they have to get him off the 40-man roster. And, you know, I just think that they also want to have Brett Hayes down in Omaha catching every day. And so it doesn't do much good for them to bring Adam Moore up and have him sit on the bench. And then also have Omaha, you know, with a guy that they're not really looking at as an everyday catcher at Omaha, getting that work. So, you know, I think he's just a guy that they're just going to have fill in. George Contreras is going to be the primary catcher until Sal's back, and that could be as soon as Wednesday. You know, if nothing else, it's going to be a week from yesterday. So he'll be back pretty soon.
I'm reading all this different stuff that Bob Dutton puts out and while we've been wrapping up here. Yesterday he tweeted 14 times in 16 games that Alex Gordon batted in the first with two outs and none on since switching from first to third.
Yeah, I mean, he's only had, I think, eight at-bats where he's had a runner in scoring position since he's been, or at least there was an article that I put up on Kings of Kauffman to that effect that is kind of looking at some of those numbers. And, you know, at that time it was eight at-bats where he had an actual runner he could drive in. And, you know, that's out of, like, 50. I mean, that's just a very low amount of people that you can actually go and drive in. And so it's really tough for a guy to drive in runs when there's nobody on. He could hit 50 homers, and if there's nobody on, he's only going to have 50 RBIs. So, you know, that's just kind of a problem. What is that?
My phone. My fiance's calling. She would like my attention. So I think that's a good point where we should go ahead and this is probably playing through too. It not only rings on my phone, but because my Google Voice number is linked, it then rings through my computer too. So usually you pick that up on the broadcast too. I've noticed that a couple of times. So, but nevertheless, I think we're rambling at this point. We've talked for an hour and a half. And, you know, the last time, I don't know if it's the last show we did or two shows ago, we were talking about how hard it was to talk about a team in first place.
Yeah, well.
Can we go back to talking about a team in first place? I'll do 45-minute shows if this team can be in first place.
Careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
Yeah, so. But, yeah, just a fan-sided note. Of course, fan-sided is where Kings of Kauffman is. If you know anybody that's a Diamondbacks fan, spread the word that on Wednesday it looks like we're going to record our first ever Venom Strikes podcast. It's really easy. That's the name of their website. It's going to be a fully integrated, fan-sided podcast. It's going to come right on the old Kansas City Baseball Vault feed. until I talk to the guys that run the Royals podcast feed and figure out what we're going to do, but I'm not paying out for a new feed, so it'll be blended in with the Royals stuff too. So maybe you all can become Diamondbacks fans for your National League team, because we'll be talking about them too. In other notes, as far as the show is concerned, there is a new live stream feed that I'm not running, but it will carry our show. And so for those of you that like to listen to our show, like through live stream, or not live stream, I'm sorry, through TuneIn, of course you can find us right on TuneIn, but also Rich over at baseballpodcast.net, who we've partnered with as well, has gotten a new feed on there, and it's a really long feed, but if you want it, just tweet me, and I'll get it for you. But if you search baseballpodcast.net, you should find that link anyways, but it's tunein.com/baseballpodcast-247-radio-feed-S200045. Again, just search it, you'll find it. But if you really want to listen to this back about four times, you probably can get all that. but it is a live feed of about seven different shows. The Diamondback show will be on there as well, and including a fantasy show. But it's a pretty good feed all in all. But if you just want to turn something on and listen to baseball because you're tired of listening to Kansas City Sports Radio or whatever else you listen to, get that done. So I think on that note, that's all the house cleaning. Jeff Hurst is still trying to sell a house.
So if you're looking.
We hope to have him back at some point. Yeah, so if you're looking, please go by Jeff's house so that we can get this all done and he can be back on the show on a regular basis. We thought he was going to be able to be on with us today, and we miss him. But can you imagine how long this show would have been if we managed to get over an hour with just the two of us?
Well, I finally had to put it down and be like, look, Jeff, we love you, but the Royals have sucked since the last time we recorded, and the greater good is if we got to go with two, we got to go with two. And he's like, well, I get that. That's cool. So
yeah, we didn't even bother for a guest because what do you ask a guest right now? What do you talk
about?
Hey,
James Shields, what's it like getting one run support every day? Oh, it sucks. Okay. I'm sure it does.
But on that note, for Michael Engel and Jeff Hur, I'm Troy Olson, and we're very sad around here, but this is the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and we'll hopefully be back next week. Bye-bye. Go Royals. Please, win a game.
They suck.